What's up, Atlanta? My name is Garrett Chapman. You're coming off the bench with me here for another 90 minutes or so. Dom Trotsky taking care of me on the board. We're going up to Hawks action. Huge game up there in Milwaukee, taking on the Bucks, the number six seed in the Eastern Conference. And in the Atlanta Hawks, I mean, look, this every single time that this team seemingly gets it together and starts winning some games, then you know a losing streak is on the way. That's just kind of what 500 basketball teams do, and that's exactly what the Atlanta Hawks are. But we got that game right here on the station. Mike Conte is going to take care of you, starting right here on 92.9 The Game at 6:30. So you got me for the next 90 minutes. Like I mentioned, Dom Trotsky on the other side of the glass. You'll be hearing his voice periodically throughout the midst of the show. We got a lot to get into because the Atlanta Falcons, they have a big decision coming up. Very, very big decision coming up. And no, I'm not talking about Kirk Cousins and Chipotle Gate and everything else that's going on up there in Cleveland. Whatever the hell Kirk Cousins is doing in Cleveland, I guess it's his business for right now. John Fricke talked about it a lot yesterday. I'm sure he talked about it a little bit more earlier on today. But look, he doesn't control the card. He doesn't hold any cards. So I'm not worried about him. If the Atlanta Falcons end up trading him, hopefully we get something back. But based off of the picks that we know the Falcons have, you got pick 15, you got pick 46, you got pick 116, and then 2 seventh-round picks. I have some ideas in that seventh round just because I cover college football and I know a lot of these flyer players. I think you got some needs on this team. But let's dig into this just a little bit because I feel like the Falcons' draft strategy is coming into focus. This is a team that has a lot of needs on defense. I know we've talked about it ad nauseum on this station. I see it everywhere on social media. What does this team need more than anything? Well, they need a defense. They need somebody who can get after the passer. They need cornerbacks. They need safety. They need linebacker help. They just need interior defensive linemen. Honestly, you get me anything on that defense in that first round, I will be a happy man. But that's not the only thing that this team needs, and we're going to get into it. And I feel like the secondary was something that was sort of an under-talked-about need for this team last year. Mike Hughes, he's on his way back to Atlanta. Keith Taylor, Mike Ford, Jordan Fuller in that secondary. Those guys are going to be coming back, but the secondary needs are being filled. Albeit it's not sexy moves. Like, I don't think that Mike Hughes coming back is all that sexy, but he's an established starter. He's a guy who you know what you're going to get opposite of A.J. Terrell. I think it's fine. It's adequate. I think you get some guys who can be some competition for Clark Phillips and Keith Taylor and Mike Ford, the guy who was here in 2022. All of these were really the only moves that the Falcons made in free agency. It's very quiet free agency period for the Atlanta Falcons. They just didn't have a lot of money to spend. But Jordan Fuller at free safety, that's another one. I mean, look, your secondary is one of the kind of dark horse candidates for that 15th pick. One of the dark horse candidates there. And based off of the moves that Terry Fontenot's made, and look, he's done a very good job of finding guys on for pennies on the dollar, who can come in and be competent starters, not necessarily game-changing players per se, but they're going to come in here and just fill needs, and that's basically what you need. Jordan Fuller just come in here, and he's not a hyper-athletic safety, but he's somebody who's familiar with Raheem Morris's defense. He's somebody who's going to come in here and just be kind of a safety valve on the backside and just drop back while Jesse Bates can be Mr. Superman, right? Mr. Superman. Just be Superman. Jump around, make plays, you know, and I think somebody like that in the back end is going to be very good. But I like the fact that they have a steady hand. DeMarco Helms is also somebody who I want to watch coming into this year. He's somebody who a lot of people forgot about. He was a big standout player in camp last year. He's going to have another opportunity coming off of an injury. He spent a long time on injured reserve. But this team, I feel like, is figuring it out in the secondary. So the idea that this draft pick could end up being a cornerback, I just don't think that that's going to be the case. You know, and I'm coming to terms with the fact that I think I'm narrowing down who I want. Because edge, obviously, it's a huge priority. It's a massive priority. They go and sign Leonard Floyd. He's somebody who I think can be a stopgap player. He's somebody who averages 8.5 sacks a game. I mean, he would have led you in sacks each of the last 6 years or so. He plays every single game. Injured, healthy, doesn't matter. He plays. And he's a damn good dog, too. 8.5 sacks in each of his last 5 seasons. He's released by the 49ers, and we're the benefactor of that. He was on with the station with Andy and Randy, I believe, last week when he was officially announced with the team. But him opposite of Arnold Ebiketie, I think that's okay. I think that's okay. Because you're not going to go find, like, Myles Garrett was never an option for this team. That was never going to be an option for this team. You know, you're not going to go get a top-end guy that's going to go do something big. You got to draft that guy. You have to draft that guy. And I think the Falcons have a couple options there. Braylon Trice, D'Angelo Malone. A lot's going to be expected from those four. I'd like to add another person, whether that's Mikael Williams or somebody else. I've kind of fallen off the James Pierce bandwagon. I'll be completely honest with you, the edge from Tennessee. Jalen Walker, he's a good player. I don't think he's going to be there. Shamar Stewart is somebody who I can look at the edge position, who I know people are going to roll their eyes, and I hate this phrase, but you know, everyone talks about how he doesn't have a lot of stats at the college level, but brace yourself. Stats are for losers. And Terry and Raheem, I know if you're listening right now, you just smiled, but everyone else is gripping their steering wheel when I say something like that. You've heard that 1,000 different times, and I'm going to tell you why it's important. It's because the college game is just, it's not what the NFL does. A guy like Shamar Stewart is going to give you a higher floor and a much higher ceiling than most anybody else in this first round. He's somebody who is off the charts athletic. He's huge, and he can get after the passer. Based off of, if you believe PFF rankings, if you believe what PFF can do, he gets after the passer decently well, and he's just got to develop a little bit.
Shamar Stewart is one of those guys where you're banking on the upside and the athleticism, and just, again, he's one of those height, weight, speed freak guys.
Yeah.
But to your point about the numbers is that numbers don't always tell the full story. If you paid attention to Texas A&M last year, one, their defensive line was just, I mean, monsters all across the board. They were one of the toughest defensive lines in the league. So, or across the nation. So a lot of those opportunities got spread amongst, and a lot of that production got spread amongst the line. But also, he wasn't asked a lot because of the defense that they run. He wasn't asked a lot to just get after the quarterback.
Yeah.
He was asked to drop back a lot, and he has that versatility. I think if you put him in a situation where if, you know, he is here in Atlanta and you just tell him, hey, look, see ball, get ball.
Yep.
I think he eats.
And I think that's why I love the pick. I think it makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. And, I mean, for as much as PFF, I mean, take it with a grain of salt. It's something that adds context, and I think it's important to look at it that way instead of the zero-sum way that some people do, especially on social media. But, look, I mean, he's got all of the physical attributes. You talk about his 40-yard dash. You talk about his three-cone drill. You talk about everything, the hip bend and everything. He's a physical freak. At his size, that is going to translate to the NFL. Right? It's something that's not a lot of these other guys. James Pierce is the person who pops in my head. He's got little T-Rex arms, and I mean, it's just not going to translate to the NFL. It's not. James Pierce is going to be the biggest bust at the edge position in this draft. It just is. He's a good player, but he's also somebody who just, the Tennessee defense lines him up on whatever the weak side is, and he just runs after the quarterback. That's all he does. That's all he can do. And that's not going to translate super well to the NFL level. But back to Shamar Stewart, I mean, like I said, stats are for losers. But he's got an 11.8 win rate in 2024, only had two sacks. But Dom, to your point, context matters. I mean, you remove the plays affected by quick game, play action, and double team blocks. He only logged 106 true pass sets last season. That's 74th in this draft class. He didn't have those opportunities to get after the passer. He didn't. And you add that upside that you look at, if Shamar Stewart is on the board for the Atlanta Falcons, I think you're foolish if you don't take him, just based purely on the upside. This is a guy who could, he reminds me a little bit of Calais Campbell. He's somebody who reminds me a little bit of Danielle Hunter. These are guys who weren't super refined with their pass rushing ability coming out of college, but it's also because they weren't asked to do that at the collegiate level. I mean, Danielle Hunter, that's somebody who was at, when he was at LSU, he's a guy who was playing this type of read defense where he's reading the tackle. He's not going after the quarterback at that level. And then he gets to the NFL and he just, you know, gets coached up. And he develops. And he takes that next step. And now he's a top five pass rusher in the NFL. You know, and that's what I think Shamar Stewart can do for the Atlanta Falcons this year. if he is there. Now, that's the biggest concern, is that I'm not the only person who's saying that. I'm not the only person who sees that. There are a lot of other teams who have needs at pass rusher. Maybe not quite as glaring as the Atlanta Falcons, but look, you add a guy like that who has the versatility to go anywhere along that defensive line. At one point, I was very worried about the Atlanta Falcons taking Shamar Stewart. The more I'm looking into this, the more I think that he just makes the most sense.
So I just wanted to ask here, because I haven't had the opportunity to ask on air, are you of the mindset that it needs to be edge rush no matter what?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And
I think it does need to be best player available.
Okay.
So long as that's a defender.
Okay, so I was going to say, because you do, I did want to ask the parameters there. So what position, like outside of edge, what other positions would you be fine with them taking in the first round?
Okay, so looking up and down, I think if they did take a cornerback, like if you get a Will Johnson or something like that, a guy who I view as a top 10 talent.
I was going to say, with where they're at, they will have their pick of the litter outside of Travis Hunter. They'll have their pick of the litter of corners.
Depending
probably.
If Will goes. They could start the run on cornerback.
Yeah.
And I think if they end up making that decision, I can sleep at night knowing that.
I really like Jahdae Barron. I really like Jahdae Barron.
I like him too. He's on my list of people who I would be okay with them taking. Benjamin Morris and somebody else who I think is going to slip into the second round. So taking him at 15 feels a little rich for my blood, but he was an All-American. Benjamin Morris is really good. Played at Notre Dame, but he got hurt last year and people didn't see him. You know, so he's somebody who I feel like could drop to the second round. And if you really want to go get a corner, maybe you can do that in the second round and go get something like that. But Barron, Jahdae Barron is somebody who at Texas, he's an All-American. He's somebody who can, he's a ball hawk. He can do it all at the cornerback position. He's physical. He can play man. He can play zone. He can drop back. He's not afraid to go tackle. He's not a great tackler. Obviously, he's a cornerback, but he's got decent size. And I think that he's somebody who I think would make the Atlanta Falcons better. So if they end up doing that and going that direction, I'd be fine with it. But I would prefer it be an interior player. Or an edge rusher. Those are my preferences. Like, you look at a Walter Nolan, who, I've seen some mock drafts. You have Walter Nolan going in the second round. I think you're foolish. There's no chance he drops the second round. And if he does, he needs to be the first guy off the board at pick 33.
So I was going to say, because you, interesting that you brought up Walter Nolan. Would you be okay with him going defensive line again? Well, specifically interior, especially after they kind of addressed that last year with, granted, now Rukororo and Brandon Doyle,
good player,
like that didn't play a whole bunch. But, and granted, you did lose Grady Jarrett, obviously. So I do understand that. But just, it seems like that investment's already been made, at least from last season. Granted, it was kind of in the second and third rounds, but it just...
It's why I think that they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what I think. I think they're expecting Rook to take that next step this year. And look, he very well could. I think there's a very high chance that he does that. And I'm not going to bet against him necessarily because he's immensely talented. He's one of those players who's a physical freak and he has a lot of upside. And I just think Walter Nolan could end up being one of the best players in this draft class. That's just all I'd have to say about it, you know? And it's not as much, and you need guys who can kind of, you need to be able to filter guys in and out. And Brandon Dorlus is somebody who you took last year. You expected him to kind of be a little bit more impactful than he was. Rook was another one of those guys. I think year two helps a defensive lineman. They just, you know, they put mass on and they become accustomed to what the NFL can do. It's a very difficult position to play, you know, and I think the experience is only going to help them. But Walter Nolan, I feel like, is somebody who can come in here and be that Jalen Carter-like player. He's not Jalen Carter, obviously, but in this day and age of the NFL, I would actually argue that interior defensive linemen are more important than edge rushers because they can do more for you. It's just more important.
Being able, the easiest way to disrupt an offense is getting pressure directly up the middle.
100%.
It's the easiest way to disrupt offense. There's really nothing, unless you have a quarterback that can break pocket and stuff like that and make some make plays outside of that. But that is the easiest way to disrupt an offense, pressure up the middle.
Look at your Pittsburgh Steelers, for example. TJ Watt's a great player.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue Cameron Hayward is a more impactful player on that team.
I can agree with that. I think at the very least, I think that he especially brings a leadership, but because of what he does in the middle,
he does the dirty work.
You soak up
double teams, mm-hmm. and you blow up run plays. And then if you can generate, that's why a guy like Aaron Donald was so good in the NFL. It's because if you blow up an offense from the middle, there's nothing that they can do. It's nothing. that they can do. And if you're blowing up double teams and you're clogging holes, and especially if you're getting pressure up the middle, it makes your team that much better. I mean, that's why the Philadelphia Eagles just won a Super Bowl, is because what they're able to do on that defensive line. And I don't know how anybody can watch the Philadelphia Eagles or the best teams in the NFL, the best defenses in particular, on an annual basis, have the best defensive lines. You have to be able to filter people in and out. And look, the ones with the best defensive lines end up getting great pass rush. They do. Sometimes it's because you have a great offense, you know, and that helps too. Of course, it's a complementary sport. You can't have one without the other necessarily. But look, this Atlanta Falcons team does not have enough dudes. And to say that we can't go get an interior defensive lineman because we invested one in Ruka Roro last year, I think is a little foolish.
That's fair.
That mentality, that is. Because you need as many bodies as you can get on that interior. You do. And I think that's why getting a Shamar Stewart is something that should be very high on this list. And Mykael Williams is up in this situation too, because he's very similar to Shamar in that way. He's somebody who's a physical freak. He's big. And he can play anywhere along the defensive line. And if you get that kind of guy, he's listed as an edge, but he's just a football player, basically. He's defender. That's what he does. He gets after the passer. And he stops the run, and he does everything else. He does everything that you need him to do. But look, the defense is getting a lot of love here, and I think it should. But a defender needs to be picked number one. Now, where it gets interesting is when I get into the second pick, though, Dom. It's pick 46 and maybe 116. I have one guy who I really want the Atlanta Falcons to take. It's Trey Harris from Ole Miss, wide receiver. This team needs a wide receiver three. Darnell Mooney's a good player. Drake London is a future Pro Bowl player, consistent Pro Bowl player. You have a rookie quarterback. You need weapons. Kyle Pitts ain't it. Trey Harris only played seven games last year. I think he led the SEC in damn near every single statistical category. He was all SEC last year, missed half the season. His stats are out of this world good. He has takeover ability, but because he got hurt, he has slipped down and out of the minds of a lot of different people. If you can get him, it's a coup if you get him in the fourth round. But if you can get him in the second round, and then you go get a Shamar Stewart at pick 15, the Atlanta Falcons are going to the playoffs in 2025, period. It's that simple. When we get back, we got a lot to get to. Is it time to relax about the Braves, or maybe should we panic? I'll give you the answer in about 5 minutes. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here. Sports Radio, 989 The Game. State Farm Arena. Interesting game coming out. Auburn and Michigan State. Sparty needs to get their act together. Tom Izzo and company, man, they've got 11 straight wins against SEC competition in March Madness, but they have 0 points in the last five-ish minutes of play. One of seven from the field. Auburn is now taking a commanding 20-8 lead. Still got time. Still got plenty of time. I kind of need Michigan State, though. I need them to pull this one out just for the sake of my bracket. But I'm not going to sit here and harp on my bracket. March Madness has been a lot of fun. We'll talk a little bit more here when we go across the A in about 7 minutes from now. But a lot to get into here with the Atlanta Braves. Because I'm seeing all over social media, and I kind of feel it. Because I'm doing this for your sake. I'm doing this for my sake. It's time to stop panicking about what this team has done through three games. I understand they're 0-3. They're winless. But, guys, they're not going to go 0-162. That's just not the way baseball works. It's not. You know, and this isn't a team that's closer to missing the play, any closer to missing the playoffs or something like that because of the way that they've played in their first three games against one of the top teams in the National League. I'm not worried about the Atlanta Braves, and you shouldn't be either. They lose yesterday, 1-0. And everyone's talking about the bats. That's fine. I get it. They need to get a little bit better. Well, a lot of bit better. Because if this is what they're going to do throughout the season, then you can be a little bit concerned. But as far as the limited sample size, because, you know, it's March. It's March. We're not even into, much less the dog days of summer. We're not even, we're barely into spring officially. Yeah, it's March. But the bats, they have been lackluster. You've had 28 strikeouts in three games. That's 35% of the outs that the Braves have accounted for over three games. That's not good. It's not good enough, I'll tell you that much. They're an even worse 1-for-22 with runners in scoring position. And that one gives me a little bit more pause, I will say, because that was a concern that the Atlanta Braves had last year. It's something that they weren't as effective a team at last year. It's one of the reasons why this team won 88 games and just generally speaking wasn't good enough. And they got ousted by this same San Diego team in the first round, or the NLDS. You know, I mean, this is just not the time to freak out, though. It's just not. Because I still see some positives. They're hitting the ball hard. You talk about Drake Baldwin. I mean, this is a kind of guy that has had some great at-bats. And he's hitting the ball hard, but he's had some terrible luck. And it's three games. So, yeah, you can talk a little bit about luck. Because he's the guy who hits a ball and it goes off of the pitcher and rolls right to the first baseman for an out. Meanwhile, you look at what the Braves have. Bounces off our pitcher, and it goes into the dugout for a ground rule double. Yeah, that's the kind of luck this team has had so far. So R-E-L-A-X, relax. Taking a note out of Aaron Rodgers' playbook there. Look what the pitching has done. I know the bullpen's been a bit of a concern. Bullpen did really well yesterday. Had an Aaron bummer. It's been a bummer. But the bullpen's going to be fine. Just give it some time. They're going to gel. They're going to come together, and they're going to figure some things out. We haven't even seen Raisel Iglesias, by the way, which is a weird thought. Three games into the season, we still haven't seen him. But Spencer Schwellenbach was absolutely fantastic. Six innings pitched yesterday, four strikeouts, only allowed one hit in six innings. The offense just wasn't there. I will say, I mean, each loss has been a different type of frustration. We'll see. Schwellenbach throws a gem. A.J. Smith-Shawver, he's on the mound tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. You can catch it there if you're not listening to Atlanta Hawks action. But it's going to be one of those starts to the season, guys. That's just the way it is. It's a very tough start because you have a San Diego Padres team, and then you go to Los Angeles to play the Dodgers, and then you come back home for your home opener. But we'll see how it ends up going. I think the Braves are going to be just fine. And do you know the last time they started 0-4 to start a season? 2021. Do you know what happened that year? They won a World Series. R-E-L-A-X. Just relax. All right, but dumb. Other things happened across the Atlanta area. So what do you say we go across the A? The Atlanta Braves, like I mentioned, they fall 1-0 out there in San Diego. They play again tonight, 7 o'clock. It's the getaway game. How about we just win this one? Just don't get swept. That's my only thing. Vibes. Just for the sake of vibes. Come on. What do you say? But Atlanta United, you talk about vibes. The vibes at Mercedes-Benz Stadium yesterday were off the charts, at least for the final 30 minutes or so. Atlanta United goes down 3-1. I'm sitting there. I'm texting with my brothers. We're those two are season ticket holders, and we go to a lot of games all the time. Been a season ticket holder since 2017. But I was frustrated. I was very frustrated because I know this team came into the year and everyone's talking about how they spent so much money, Miguel Almiron, Latiloth, and look, the offense is great. Just give it some time. Let the attack gel. Okay. Well, it wasn't. And then it was. Final 30 minutes, you're down 3-1. First win against the NYCFC in 5 years, if you can believe that. 5 years since Atlanta United has taken down NYCFC, and it's their biggest comeback in club history. Ties with one from 2018. So you talk about things that last time you did it during a championship season, that's one of those things. It was 2018, the year Atlanta United won MLS Cup. But look, the concerns are valid. My concerns that I had with this team are valid. Pedro Amador is a crucial piece to this team. Chonqui, I mean, he's a depth player. He's not somebody who you're going to be playing at left back for any extended period of time unless you absolutely have to. You know, Pedro Amador is that good of a player. He just is. And he's adding some depth to that back end, that Chonqui, that is. Pedro's your dude. And Pedro was one of the biggest reasons why this team beats Inter Miami last November or so and advances in the playoffs. It's because you got such good play out of him at left back. And with him hurt, I'm concerned. I'm just concerned. So if he can come back, and he was warming up before the game, he's still on the shelf. So hopefully we can see him here in just a little bit. But the concerns are valid. Chungkwi had some bad giveaways, but the offense that did come alive just in time. Alexei Mironchuk, Miggy, they both score. Miggy scored his first goal since 2018, right before he left for Newcastle. But Latte Lathi hits the winner. Saba forced an own goal in the second consecutive match, which is nuts. But you talk about just work rate, general work rate. I'd put Saba up against just about anybody. But look, Atlanta United, you're still putting the pieces together. I'm going to be patient. I got frustrated a little bit yesterday, so bear with me. I just want to see him win. I just want to see him win. And matches like yesterday remind me of what they can really do if they're playing at their absolute best. But back to the Braves here for a second. Spencer Strider, he made the start yesterday. Looks pretty good. He's ramping up. I know that Alex Anthopoulos was on with the station, and Brian Snicker was on last week, and a lot of Braves people on this station. And Strider's he's on track. He's on pace, and he'll be here hopefully by the end of April. I don't think that you saw anything. He's still ramping up. He had three innings, allowed two hits, one earned run, got a walk and six Ks. 60 pitches, though. That's really the biggest thing, and he's throwing strikes, I think 47 strikes or something like that. I think Grant McCauley put that out there. I'll take it. It looks pretty good, and I think he'll be fine, and this team is going to get a lot better when he comes back. And that's before you even mention Ronald Acuna. So, look, this Braves team is going to be just fine. Hopefully, they just hold on. Outings like Spencer Schwalenbach had yesterday. Ronaldo Lopez looked pretty good. Not great, but first start. Chris Sale is also here. You know, this rotation is going to be just fine. And Spencer Strider, as soon as he comes back, it's going to elevate this unit into one of the very best in baseball. But like I mentioned, March Madness is... not exactly mad, but kind of chalky. Michigan State just hits a 23-13. That's your score. Auburn and Michigan State over there at State Farm Arena in downtown Atlanta. This is the last of the four teams who is going to be represented down there in San Antonio. It's all one seats. Everyone complains about chalk, too. I don't get why that four-letter word has become such a... it's like stigmatized, it seems like. People get very upset when it gets chalky, but I completely disagree. I want to see the best teams in basketball play each other in the Final Four. All due respect to the Loyola Chicago or all those other NC State last year. Like, fine. They're fun. They're great to follow, and it's good to cheer for them. But I want to watch the best teams in basketball play each other. That's what March Madness is all about. I love the Cinderellas, but it is the most overrated talking point from people. Anybody who complains about the Cinderellas and the lack thereof this year, come on, just enjoy the sport that we have and what's happening in front of us. I mean, because these are some unbelievably good teams. And I just want to watch these guys play. I mean, Florida, they get this wild, wild win. And we'll hear from Jay Billis here in about 20 minutes or so when he had some comments about Florida. Should they still be considered the favorite? I know a lot of people had them as the favorite, but they win the wildest game, I'd say, of the Elite Eight. They beat Texas Tech 84-79. They had the best minute of their life. Let me tell you what. I was sitting on my couch watching the game. I stand up, leave the room to walk my dog for a moment. I come back from walking my dog. It's just like a quick pee, folks. Like I took the dog out, down the stairs, goes to the bathroom. By the time I'm back upstairs, it's a tie ball game. It's tied 75-75. I'm like, what the hell just happened? Terrible minute to miss, but great minute if you're a Florida Gators fan or if you're somebody like me who has them winning your bracket. Best minute of their lives. They go on to win against Texas Tech. They kind of just choked that game away. But this is one of the other things that you see. You get the best teams playing. Duke might be the best team in college basketball right now. They're averaging, Dom, I see you've got your Duke basketball or your Duke sweatshirt on, 91 points per game. This team is nuts.
Yeah, man. Loaded.
Then you got the Naismith Player of the Year, the runaway favorite.
Yeah, I would say this team is loaded. Like, Cooper's amazing. Khan Kanupala is also a dog on this team. Tyrese Proctor. Like, there's
deep
depth. And I made this joke the other day. I feel sorry for the Duke haters, you know? Like, a lot of people, Coach K, you know, went out and he lost his final game against UNC, and everyone thought, oh, man, great, the Duke era is over. Coach K is gone, we're good.
Yeah.
No, welcome to the John Shire Show.
I will say this, too, about John Shire. I sent this tweet last night after the game, and I don't think anybody in college basketball has had a more difficult position to be in pressure-wise than John Shire. And all he's done is deliver at the highest level. That's all he's done. He's the only head coach to win a conference title, both regular season and tournament. He's reached two Elite Eights, and now he has a Final Four in his first 3 years. One other reminder, he's 37 years old. He's just 37. He's only going to get better as a head coach. And his Cooper Flagg-led Duke team scores 85 points, wins by 20, and their scoring average goes down. Good luck. Yeah, and you heard it earlier on the station, Tennessee. They get routed by Houston. They got the SEC chance. I don't know what you're trying to prove, Houston. Yeah, the SEC had, one, two, three, four teams in the Elite Eight. They have nothing left to prove to anybody. They were everything advertised. You're just also really damn good. 69-50, that's going to feed families. Duke and Houston, woof. It's going to be a lot of fun. We shall see who ends up winning down there at State Farm Arena. The winner of that one, they'll get the Florida Gators. I know for my sake, my bracket, I need Michigan State to pull it out. We'll see if they can. I'll give you an update here on the other side, see what else is happening. But Dom Trotsky, I see him. He's cooking something up over there. Take a look at it here in about 5 minutes. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. The Atlanta Falcons made a roster decision that I find very interesting. Not that sexy, but it's kicker, you know, a very important position. It is an important position, just objectively. Well, Young Wei Koo, he left a little bit to be desired last year. He left some points on the table. Missed too many field goals. Missed way too many field goals. 9 misses last year. 73% is just not good enough if you are an NFL kicker. That's just all there is to it. It's his lowest conversion rate since joining the Falcons in 2019. Lowest of his career, and I don't think it's really that close. He just signed that big old contract last year, big for a kicker, I guess. And Falcons just, they needed more production there. It cost you games last year, and it cost you a chance to go to the playoffs. Because, I mean, you look specifically at that game against New Orleans. That was tough. He missed 3 kicks in that game, and it was weird to remember that. So I saw the news that they go out and sign Lenny Craig, German kicker, plays in the European Football League, and I don't think that Koo's necessarily on the way out. I think Craig is the guy who's going to come in here. Lots of competition for this guy, by the way. He signs a 3-year deal. I didn't see a number assigned to it. All I saw was that it was a 3-year deal, and he was going to go visit other places after performing for coaches and scouts at the NFL Combine. Falcons met with him, and the Falcons were just lucky enough to get him on the first visit. He was going to go elsewhere and look at some other teams and kind of do the rounds, and the Falcons made sure he didn't leave the building. They made a very competitive offer to him, from what I've heard. And look, you don't sign a guy on a 3-year deal if you don't have some level of expectation that he could be your guy. So, competition or not, Lenny Craig could be the kicker for the Atlanta Falcons in 2025. There's at the very least going to be a competition with Young Wei Koo. I mean, this is a guy who comes in here, hits all 14 of his field goal attempts anywhere between 35 and 55 yards at the NFL Combine. Pat McAfee had some high praise for him at the Combine, had some very positive things to say about him. We'll see. We'll see if it's just one of those extra plot lines that you got to follow as we build up and ramp up to the 2025 season. Lot of stuff to get into here. But Dom Trotsky, we got a little producer segment. What you got, man?
Yes, sir. So we have a little bit of fun here. I'm going to play a little bit of What's More Likely.
Okay.
I'll try and word these. I know some of them will be worded a little funny, so I'll try and sound it out as best I can to make sure everyone understands. But since you brought up Krieg and since you brought up the German kicker, I came up with another quick
Okay.
One for you right here.
Quick on your feet. Here, I like that.
So, with the Falcons signing the German kicker, obviously, assuming, let's say that he does win the job.
Yeah.
Who is more likely to make a schnitzel joke first, Mike Bell or John Fricke?
Oh, Mike Bell.
Mike Bell.
Mike Bell.
Okay, there
no
we go. There
question.
We go. There we go.
No question. I love that. No, the amount of comments that I think Mike Bell would have just in the back pocket, ready to go.
In the tuck. Absolutely.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. I mean, Heffenweisen or something. There are jokes in there to be made.
Yeah.
No. That's funny. That's a good pull. I love
that. Thank you. All right. Now, I'll go to one, and I gave you this one earlier, so I'm sure we discussed this one a little bit because I wanted to give you an idea of what, you know,
sure,
what you had coming. But what is more likely? Ronald Acuna steals more bases or Michael Penix throws more touchdowns?
Yeah, so you threw this one at me, and I think ultimately it comes down to how many stolen bases you expect Ronald Acuna to get. My number for him, I think he's still a 30-steal guy. I think his floor, even with him stealing fewer bases, which I don't think he's going to be quite as active as he has been. I mean, hell, he's not going to go steal 71 bases again. I mean, I don't think that's happening. You're fresh off of your second knee surgery on your other knee. So, look, I think he's still going to be active on the bases. It's still something that I think it's a threat that he's always going to have. And I think with the enlarged bases and just his sheer speed, he's going to be a threat on the base path. So 30 steals is about what I'd put him at over the course of, let's say, 130 games or so, whatever he ends up playing this year. I think that's a very strong number for him. If we get Michael Penix throwing 30 or more touchdowns in 2025, the Atlanta Falcons are comfortably winning the NFC South, and we could be looking at them potentially as a Super Bowl contender. That's what I would look at if Michael Penix throws for more than 30 touchdowns. I don't think he hits that number, though. I just don't think that's realistic, and I don't think that's a fair expectation to put on him because he's effectively a rookie next year.
Yeah.
He's had three starts, you know, and look, I have no expectations that he's going to come in here and blow the world up. I mean, statistically, he was fine through a couple of games.
So
25 touchdowns is where I probably put
it. So here's the only thing, though. We agree. Can you and I both agree Michael Penix will be better than what Kirk Cousins was last year?
It depends. First half or second half of the year.
Okay, so that's fair. So let's say, at the very least, do you believe Michael Penix can match what Kirk Cousins did in the first half of the season last year?
I think the Atlanta Falcons will be very happy if he does.
Okay, so that's...
I don't think he will, though.
Okay,
no.
Okay,
I gotcha. Think it's a step... Because, look, it's not a knock on Michael Penix, and it's not me heaping immense amounts of praise on Kirk Cousins, but Kirk Cousins also had a 500-yard game. He had two NFC Player of the Weeks.
So that's what I was getting to, was that Kirk Cousins, because he had a very good start to the season. However, Kirk Cousins also did go a month without throwing a touchdown.
And that's why it's an important distinction to make. Is it pre-injury
or
post-injury?
And he still got to 18. He still got to 18 passing touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. But he had multiple games with like four touchdown passes.
But
he
went a month without throwing a touchdown and then missed the final three games of the season.
Yep.
So essentially, that's seven games where he didn't throw a touchdown.
Yeah.
And he had 18. So I'm just saying, if you think Penix can at least be as good or close to that, I don't think 30's out of the realm. I do think it's a big ask, especially for a rookie.
I think 25 is really that number.
That's fair.
I just keep coming back to that number.
25, I think, is a happy medium.
I think so. All right, what you got?
Next up, what is more likely, that the Falcons draft only defensive players or they use their first rounder on an offensive player?
Oh, don't. Oh, my God. Tom, you're going to kill me, dude.
What's more likely, defensive draft or offensive player in the first round?
All defensive draft? No. Offensive player in the first round. I'm going to say that.
Really? You think that's more likely?
Yeah. I mean, look at the track record. Look at his track record. He's never taken a defender with the first pick. He's never done it.
Well, here's what I will say.
And he's not going all defense. I think you're going to take at least one offensive lineman.
I was going to say, Drew Dahlman signing with the Bears gives him some bail. It gives him an out because then you can it can make sense in your head.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you lost your starting center. He's one of the best centers in the league.
Yeah.
You gotta address that interior offensive line. You got a young quarterback. Like, there's some bail that he can kind of shoot himself for this
and
one.
And you need a wide receiver.
Time. Yes.
You need a wide receiver. You know, Seth McLaughlin, Jake Majors from Texas. McLaughlin, he played at Alabama. Then he transfers up to Ohio State, wins a national championship and a Remington Award. But he's coming off an Achilles injury. So,
what are you going to do when Terry Fontenot selects Colston Loveland?
Oh, my God. Look, hey, I would not put anything past Terry Fontenot at this point. I really would not put anything past him. I think your offensive line is in pretty good shape just because you did let Drew Dahlman walk. But Drew Dahlman wasn't the reason this offense had success. Yeah. This offensive line had success. Continuity is very important, but he also missed several games last year, and there wasn't a big drop-off when Ryan Neuzel kind of picked up the mantle where he dropped it. You know, he picked up the rope, and the offensive line stayed pretty solid. Yeah. You know, so I wouldn't be terribly shocked if they don't draft a center. I was a little surprised that they didn't at least bring somebody in, but Javon Gwynn, he's on this roster. And then a tackle, I think you're okay. I would be very surprised if you took a tackle. I wouldn't be disappointed by it necessarily. If you do it at the 15, I'd be a little disappointed unless just one of those dudes drops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Storm Norton, he's your swing tackle. I think he's fine. Jake Matthews, obviously you just extended him. He's going to be your dude at left tackle. And then Caleb McGarry, he's good enough for right now. I think that's an issue you can push off another year.
Yeah.
He's going to be on this roster. You don't save enough money by cutting him or anything else like that. So I expect him to still be here. And then Lindstrom and Bergeron at guard. I mean, you're fine there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Falcons, ironically, have the highest paid offense in 2025 in the NFL. They're $20 million higher than the second place Kansas City Chiefs. Just by the way, they're spending $182 million. But a lot of that is because you've invested heavily into your offensive line. Heavily. And I think that offense is still going to be a lot better because of that investment. And I saw a lot of people complaining about that fact on social media. Like, oh, man, the Falcons are blank, blank, blank. Yeah. Well, it's because you paid a lot of money for a quarterback who's not going to start next year. And you have an offensive line that's very expensive.
Fair. Fair.
Yeah.
All right. Next up here, let's talk...
Trey Harris. I will say this one more time. I said it earlier in the show. Trey Harris needs to be an Atlanta Falcon in 2025.
Okay, all right.
I want him on this team. I want him on this team so badly. He's gonna be the best wide receiver potentially in this draft class.
I'm not mad at that.
And I pound the table for that guy. All right, what's next? What you got?
Next up here, what is more likely? The Georgia Bulldogs win the SEC?
Football?
Or the Atlanta Braves? Yes,
okay.
Football. Or the Atlanta Braves win the NL East?
Braves. I think that comes down to the quarterback position for the Georgia Bulldogs. I think they kind of fell backwards into an SEC championship this year. I don't expect that to be the case next year. You've got a difficult slate again. It's the same slate. It's just flipped.
I also expect Texas to be better just because Arch Manning is going to be the quarterback now.
Quinn Ewers got so much hate last year.
Quinn Ewers was not a bad quarterback.
No,
he just couldn't throw the
means.
Ball down the field. Like, that was his
Arch,
only fit.
I think Arch gives you a higher ceiling.
Yes.
But, look, I'm not going to believe in Texas until they actually get over the hump against Georgia. Look, he's 0, Sark's 0-2. He's 0-2 against Kirby. So, until proven otherwise, Georgia's, I'd give them the edge, and they're playing at Sanford Stadium. It's going to be on their side here. Texas is going to actually have to play a true road game in 2025. They didn't do it last year. Just reminder for everybody, their toughest road opponent last year was Vanderbilt. All due respect to the Commodores, but Georgia, I think, has some issues. I think it's just by virtue of competition. There are a lot of teams who I feel like are going to take a big step forward next year. Ole Miss is not going anywhere. Alabama's going to be a solid team. You got to play both of them, albeit in Athens. Tennessee's not going anywhere. Florida's, I think, going to take a big step forward. Texas, of course, I think Texas is going to be the favorite, but you're starting a new quarterback, Gunnar Stockton. You need something out of him. And I just think the track record says that the Atlanta Braves, who have won 7 consecutive NL East titles, and then last year they trip and fall a little bit and they just get completely injured. I think history favors the Atlanta Braves in this discussion. So I'll side with them.
All righty. Last one here before we get out of here. So as of right now, Onyeka Okongwu has 66 made three-pointers on the season.
Wow.
66.
I'll take that. Okay.
My question to you, what is more likely? Onyeka Okongwu finishes with more threes than Kyle Pitts will have receptions next season.
God. Oh, it's Onyeka. He's not going
to
hit
66. Yeah,
right, he's not
going to
hit another one. He's not going to hit a. He's not going to, even if he doesn't hit another one over the final nine games of the season, he's going to have more than Kyle Pitts. If Kyle Pitts gets to 50 catches next year, I'll be happy. You know, he's already a tremendous disappointment at tight end. He's an even bigger disappointment at pick number four. Overall, I think if Kyle Pitts gets me to 50, I'll be fine. I'm not holding my breath on anything Kyle Pitts anymore. I don't believe in him. I don't think anybody, I don't think this coaching staff believes in him. I think Onyeka Okongwu has already hit enough threes. That's such a sad thought, though. You invested a fourth overall pick
on a guy that can't get you more than 40 catches a season.
Come on, man. Well, what's his career high? It was his rookie year. I'm assuming he had 1,000 yards. I guess that's got to be his career.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was exaggerating there. He's gone over 40. He got 68 his rookie year. And
yeah,
he got
that's a good number.
53 in 2023.
Okay. 53. Okay, so it's going to be pretty close.
It could be there.
It's not as far. And I think it just depends. It depends. I think if Drake London's going to eat, Darnell Mooney's going to eat, it's a lot of mouths to feed. And you got to keep feeding that running attack, too. So Kyle Pitts is low on my list of people I really want to see get involved. Maybe if he takes that step forward. If he gets to that 70 mark, I'd be very happy with him. That's a Pro Bowl season, dude. 70-plus catches for a tight end, that's a potential Pro Bowl year. So I'm not going to hold my breath for anything positive from Kyle Pitts anymore. I'm over that. I don't want him even to be on this team at this point. I don't think he makes you any better. But we'll see what happens. You know, Terry Fontenot's He's tied himself to Kyle Pitts for whatever reason. When we get back, though, someone I tied myself to, the Florida Gators in this March Madness. Do they still have the leg up on everybody? Jay Billis seems to think so. I'll let you hear from him. We have an audio overload and a little bit of college football when we get back. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. The Auburn Tigers are in control, specifically a potential Naismith Player of the Year candidate in Broome. This dude's going ham in this first half. Last I looked, he had 13 points. Not in the game. In like the first 10 minutes of the game. Auburn's in pretty good shape right now. They just hit halftime. He's got 17 points right now. 7 of 9 from the field. 11 rebounds and 2 assists. And some of those assists have been really nice. Really nice. 33-24. Is your score, though, Michigan State? I need you guys. But this is kind of playing in the way that Michigan State is in that range of potentially coming back. They're a strong second-half team. They're a team that's, you know, had their fair share of success against SEC teams. Tom Izzo, I think, is the ultimate X factor. You get a guy like that. The coaching edge of a Michigan State team in this one, Bruce Pearl's a damn good coach, and it's no knock on him. It's just the fact that Tom Izzo's that good. That's really Michigan State's only hope in this one. You've had guard play that I think has been okay in this one. You start really painfully slow. You have multiple turnovers as this game got going. And this Auburn team can beat you in a lot of different ways. But I think Auburn, one of the best teams remaining in this tournament, the number one overall seed in this tournament. I don't think that they were the best team, though, coming in. They were kind of stumbling around a little bit. We'll see what they can do here in the second half. I know for the sake of my bracket, I'm sitting here hoping that Michigan State can pull it out, but we'll see. I just want to see the best teams at this point in the tournament, and we really have seen the best teams, you know, because the Duke Blue Devils, I mean, they're averaging 90-plus points per game. I think it's 91.5 points. Like I said earlier in the show, they scored 85 points, won by 20, and their scoring average went down, which is just nuts to think about. The depth and skill that this team has is off the charts, and you look at Houston and what they're able to do with the big men running the floor and the athleticism that they have reminds me of, I mean, obviously I wasn't alive to watch it, but if I slam a jamma, you know, that team that was just, or that's UNLV, but it's like you look at what those teams are when they're at their very best. Those teams big, they're athletic, they're strong, they run the floor really, really well. And I'm really interested in what this team can do down the stretch. Duke in Houston, that's going to be a lot of fun. But the Florida Gators, I think that's an interesting team to follow here. Because I think going into this tournament, I don't think anybody was playing better I think there's no team that had fewer question marks than the Florida Gators. Because Duke, I mean, you have Cooper Flagg, who's dealing with some injuries, and he had a bad ankle sprain and against Georgia Tech in the ACC tournament. And that was a big question mark that was hanging over the Blue Devils. And, of course, hasn't seemed to affect them at all. And Cooper Flagg looks just like normal, and they're in great shape. But Jay Billis was asked about this. They escaped Texas Tech. They're in the Final Four. They're the third one seed that's in. They were the first team to punch their ticket, but they looked a little shaky. And Jay Billis had to steady some nerves from Gator fans, and he still says that this team has an argument as the best team in the tournament. Take a listen.
I think all of us thought on Selection Sunday, Florida's the best team in the country. I haven't let go of that thought, although Duke is playing the best right now. Florida is formidable because they have incredible depth. They've got outstanding guards that have experience. They're tough at both ends of the floor. They're good defensively. And they've got a bucket getter under the hottest of hot lights in Walter Clayton Jr. When things break down, he can go get you one. And for him to come up with 30 in that game and to execute on that stage with that amount of pressure, just blown away by his presence. He's not a good player. He is a truly great basketball player.
Yeah, the Iona transfer. That's a team that, when Florida plays their best brand of basketball, I think they are the best team in America. In my opinion, I think that's just a fact for me. You know, and I think that a team like Auburn or a team like Duke, I think they just gave you a more consistent level, because this is a Florida team that can go out and lose to Georgia, you know? And look, all due respect to the Dogs, I love the Dogs, but woof. And not in a good way. That's not a game that Florida had any business losing. But they did. And it looked like they were about to get ousted by Texas Tech. Looked like they were going to get ousted by a few times in this tournament. You know, and what did they play? No, it was Houston who played Gonzaga. But look, this is it. It was UConn. UConn, that's who it was. And look, that's a championship team with championship pedigree. They had won two straight national titles. But you looked a little shaky, you know, and that's not a team that was really all that great. That's a 9 seed this year. And that's just what Florida's able to do. If they play their best brand of basketball, though, you got a whole extra weekend. You're preparing for the Final Four down there in San Antonio now. I think that they can go out and still win this tournament. Jay Billis just said it. You've got a guy at the guard position who can really take over. And he did. In the final 3 minutes or so against Texas Tech, you saw what they're able to do when it all clicks. It's just you're not going to have that benefit of the doubt against an Auburn. Against maybe a Michigan State, you'd have that little runway. You won't against Auburn. You won't against Duke. You won't against Houston. So Florida's got to get their act together. I think that that's still a team who can win a national title. I think the SEC still has a fantastic shot at winning a national title. And if I had to be a betting man on it, then I would still say they will. And also earlier, I misspoke. Phi Slamma Jamma, yeah, definitely was Houston. Akeem Olajuwon and company. I don't know what I was thinking there for a second, but
while we're both airing out our errors, I misspoke earlier when I said Onyeka's had 66 on the season. He has 66 on his career.
Okay, yeah. So when you said 60, the initial comment on 66, I was like, wow, that's really good. I didn't think it was that great. But
Yeah. It's for his career. I misspoke.
What is he at? 30 something?
39 this season.
39? That's still a solid number.
Yes.
That's still a solid number. And for anybody who was listening, if Kyle Pitts' receptions, if he can get to 40, like I said, that's fine. That's a fine number. But Onyeka's, I mean, like, he's hit some threes. He's had some big moments. Hopefully he can hit some threes tonight. I think he's got his work cut out for him, the Milwaukee Bucks. But Alex Anthopoulos, he was also on with the station earlier this week. He was on with the Frickster and had some high praise for John. I love John. John's a good dude. And Alex Anthopoulos was talking about how he's an avid listener and everything else, and talking about the Swampers. And if you start talking about the Swampers and you use the term Swampers, I know you listen to the John Fricke Experience. I know that you've been listening to this man. I mean, he's been on the radio here for a decade, man. I mean, he's as good as it gets, and he loves Atlanta. And Alex Anthopoulos was, he's talked about how much he learned about it. But he also mentioned the bullpen. And I think the bullpen was the thing that Alex was criticized the most over as this team was ramping up towards this season. because I thought there was going to be a little bit more expenditure, if you will, on the bullpen. There wasn't. John Fricke asked him about it, and this is what he had to say.
No, I think that's very fair. And look, that we knew once you last year it was Joe Jimenez's AJ Minter at the start of the year, lockdown, guys you felt very good about. Pierce Johnson coming off his 23 season, you felt very, very good about the depth there. Now, look, we thought we had our bullpen was still strong at the end of the year. We lost AJ Minter for essentially the month of August, September, and into October. So we had lost him for the last third, and we still felt we had a good bullpen because Dylan Lee and Aaron Bummer did a nice job from the left side. So we need guys like Daisbell Hernandez. You know, Pierce Johnson didn't throw as well at the end of the year. We think he's back to throwing like he did early and like he did in 23. So if Pierce can now be back to who he was, Daisbell Hernandez did a nice job as well. Anaris, with his experience, he saved a lot of games for the Cubs, pitched well for the Astros. Angel De Los Santos has a fantastic arm. But look, there's definitely an element of unknown there. There's volatility there. You know, I've asked Snit the same question you did. How you feeling? We have a 3-1 lead, and starter goes 5 or 6, especially early. You know, starters aren't going that deep. They're going to monitor the pitch count and so on. How are we lining up 6, 7, 8, 9? And you know, he's going to go with what he feels like. But he also understands it might take a little bit of time to feel out how it's going to go. And you don't want to use the word experiment, like you said, or audition and so on. But, you know, he's had to adjust over time. Last year, Daisbell Hernandez worked his way into getting late-inning opportunities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember that game against the Marlins. Season's on the line. Every game counted. Bases loaded. He brought him in, and there was a lot of other guys in the bullpen, and he believed in him. So he's made adjustments on the fly in the past. We wouldn't have thought Ramon Laureano would be a starting outfielder for us, and he was. He beat out Kelnick, beat out Adam Duvall. He was playing the best. So I do think you're going to see guys like Dylan Lee late in the game. I think Pierce Johnson late in the game. I don't want to speak for Snit. I think after that, whether it's De Los Santos, Neris, Daisbell Hernandez, Bummer, I think it'll depend on how some of the scouting reports are, guys susceptible to velocity or to off-speed or left-handed sink and things like that. But he'll find his way through it. Hopefully these guys get the job done for him. And we've got a chance to have a strong pen, but we don't necessarily have the certainty that we thought we had in years past.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the night shift. And look, that was the biggest reason you won a World Series. You have a bullpen who comes in and lights out like that. They'll literally turn the lights off on teams in the playoffs. I mean, you don't have that. But everybody's freaking out and losing their head. Relax. It's going to be just fine. I mean, just for example, Aaron Bummer. Brace yourselves. He's a 10.8 ERA. Huh? What? That's 2 runs. He's allowed 2 runs. The number gets big because it's, you know, game 3. Aaron Bummer, Dylan Lee, they're the only, Daisbell Hernandez. Those are your only guys who've had more than 2 games, or more than 1 game, I should say, out of the bullpen. We haven't even seen Raisel Iglesias yet. The bullpen's going to be fine. Give it a rest. It's not going to be what it was, and I think that's just where fans get a little uncomfortable. And that's okay. I get it. I understand your frustration with it because you're trying to go win a World Series. That's your expectation and should be. Winning a National League East is great. I want to win a World Series. And if the bullpen's going to be the reason you don't, I will be frustrated about that just like you. But got 159 games left. We also got a trade deadline. Seems going to be just fine. It's a volatile position. That I'd say a bullpen is the most volatile thing in sports. You can make an argument about that or for that. All right. We got a couple minutes left here, Dom. What do you say we go hit a college football roundtable? Fran Brown, Deion Sanders, those are two guys who had a bit of a off-field conversation on social media. They were talking about doing a scrimmage instead of a regular spring game where, you know, they scrimmage each other. They just play each other, their own teams. But they wanted to see if, and Fran Brown was like, hey, I'll fly out there. We'll get the guys out. We'll line them up. We'll play it. Well, NCAA said, no, thank you. Why? Who knows? NCAA just wants to stay relevant. There is nothing really that I find compelling about the NCAA. There are, that four-letter group has control over little, not much. Like, at this point, like, what do they have? Control of the uniforms that you can wear, the colors on your shoes, But damn it, are they going to flex what little power they have? That's such a bummer. Because the idea that you were going to go get a look at your team, hitting a different colored jersey, first off, playing a different team, and people are going to come show up and watch. They're going to watch that. And I think you're going to learn more about your team. I think it would have been good for the competitive nature of Fran Brown's team next year for Syracuse. I think it would have showed us a lot about what Deion Sanders in Colorado would look like in 2025. Travis Hunter's gone. Shedeur Sanders is gone. I mean, look, you've turned over a lot of players, and he just signed a big old contract, too. Did you see that? $10 million, one of the highest per year. $52 million total over the next however many years. I mean, look, it's going to be a lot of money going into his pocket. And I wish we could have gotten a spring game. NCAA just wants to remain relevant. But only other thing, Jeremy Pruitt, he's suing the NCAA. I would say Jeremy Pruitt's on the short list of some of the most insufferable people of the last decade. Man, he is annoying. Great defensive coach. Did a lot of good things when he was a defensive coordinator here in Georgia, over in Athens. But he goes up and, look, he wasn't very good. He just wasn't very good. And you're handing out thousands of dollars in McDonald's bags in the drive-thru line, and you're suing the NCAA for $100 million because they, quote-unquote, colluded with Tennessee to make him the scapegoat? Oh, brother, get a load of yourself. Get off your horse, man. You just sucked. You sucked, and you cheated. That's what made it even worse. There's a reason you're not coaching in college anymore. You know what he's doing now? He's a high school football coach. And look, that's no shame on any high school football coach out there. I know several college high school cool football coaches. They do a great job, and I have a lot of respect for them. It's not an easy job, but Jeremy Pruitt went from head coach in college. He was on a defensive staff for the New York Giants. There's a reason people don't want you. You just weren't good, and you're also just not a very likable guy. Writing's on the wall. All right, when we get back, we are counting down the minutes. Mike Conti's going to take over at 6:30, but I got 10 more minutes with you. We're going to talk a little Hawks before we lead in to Hawks pregame when we get back. My name is Garrett Chapman. His name is Dom Troskin on the other side of the glass. You're coming off the bench with me right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.